Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Private Education, the Smart Sex and Relationships podcast. I'm Aisling Keenan, and
I'm Andrea, Dr. Dre.
And we are back, but we will be going soon because this is the last, episode of season two. Now, we've done 12, this is number 12, we've done 11. And we're going to have a little few weeks break where Andrea and I will put our heads together and come up with some ideas for season three. There's also potential. You see, I haven't actually discussed this with Andrea yet, but there's talk in my head of potentially recording video recording our recording sessions and putting them on YouTube maybe.
Ah, I want to do that.
Do you think it'd be good?
Yeah, I think
I feel like it would be good. I feel like people would be into that.
I think they might.
Because then they'll be able to see our faces.
I don't know if that's such a good idea because sometimes We'll give it a go.
And who's that's to really say? Fun. There's a lock that can be, you know, guessed from my face, as you know. If anyone that's listening that knows me in real life will know that every waking emotion that I have is featured all over my face at all times, so you can always tell. I make a terrible, terrible liar because you can always tell by my eyebrows pretty much.
They do give it away. They do give it away.
For the last episode of season two, we are going to talk about conversations you need to have with a person that you're considering either getting engaged to or getting married to. Preferably these conversations will be had pre-engagement, but failing that, definitely pre-marriage, I think these conversations need to be had. So Andrea and I have picked 5 topics each, 10 in total. Quick maths there. Well done me. And we're going to start with this is the very, 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 very first one that occurred to me when I thought about conversations you need to have with someone that you're considering getting engaged to or marrying, and that is money. So the reason I say that is money is so important in a relationship, and you need to be fully abreast of how much money your partner has, what they earn, how much debt they might be in, and all of those sorts of things, where they get their money, do their family have money, are they good savers? Because you are going to be legally bound to this person. And if you are legally bound to them, you are intrinsically linked to their finances, for better or for worse, as they say in vows. Things like ask them, do they want to have a joint account? Do they want to share finances? Do they want to keep their finances separate from their partner? And ask them, ask them, I know of a couple who it wasn't until they were deep into their relationship that one person discovered that the other person was really, really wealthy and had lots and lots of savings. And meanwhile, the other half of that couple was scrounging to save for a deposit for a mortgage and, on a very, very tight budget every month. And then when eventually they decided to get married, it was we're grand. We can get a mortgage for 2 million quid if we want. And that caused a bit of resentment, I think, because, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you feel about it?
Yeah, no, I definitely think so. And it can be like, if you're at the stage where you're going to be getting engaged or getting married, and I agree, get before you get engaged even, because it's if you're going to be getting engaged, it's quite serious. And the intention is to get married.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a good opportunity before that happens to have a chat about those things. I think slowly asking questions through, like, as you're starting to get to know somebody is a good idea, instead of sitting down across the table and being like, so open your bank account, let me see what's going on. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't have to be like that. Yeah. But there does need to be a frank conversation around finances, and people's relationship with money, I think, is important.
Yeah.
Especially when marriage ends up, you know, unless it's prenuptial agreements or whatever occurs, like, you, as you say, your debt will be their debt and their debt will be your debt. And you just,
and also, like, even if neither of you has debt in particular, right, and you're not, you know, in danger of inheriting someone's debt, because I know that's different depending on the country, depending on the location, you know, you might not inherit debt depending on where you are in the world. But, like, even, you know, are they a good saver? Are they responsible with money? Are they, how do they view their money? How do they use their money? What do they consider value? You know, do they gamble? Do they shop online a lot? Like, it's very useful to know if you're gonna permanently attach yourself to someone legally. You know, money comes into it. Almost every conversation that you'll have, money will come into the it'll come into the wedding conversation, you know, planning a wedding. Mm-hmm. It'll come into the how are we going to buy a house conversation. It'll come into the how much can we travel conversation. Like, you'll come into everything. And I just think it's a really, really, really important one to, and I know you're saying, like, don't just sit across the table and, you know, okay, open your bank account there, but, like, actually, I kind of feel like it can be as frank as that. If you are at the stage with someone where you know them well enough that you think you want to marry them, I think it can be that frank. Like, it can be, we need to talk about finance. You know, how much do you earn? What do you do with it? Do you save? Do you not save? How much have you got in different accounts? Are you in credit card debt? Like, because if you then are, you know, building a household with someone and they're in, like, I don't know, $100,000 worth of credit card debt, your household income is going to be affected by them having to pay off ridiculous interest and ridiculous loans, you know. So, like, because you're no longer, now obviously lots of people keep their finances completely separate and that's absolutely fine, but in most cases it makes sense, I suppose, to merge finances. And if you are merged with someone who, like, you know, a big chunk of their income goes to paying off massive, massive loans or student loans or debt or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that you kind of need to know, I think.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And not to focus on debt. It's so important, because you're starting on a back foot then without even knowing, if you didn't have that conversation beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And the other thing to note as well, I think, is when you are joining a financial union, so to speak, of you and your other half, the conversations need to be had about, like, what's fair as a contribution depending on what your income is, because it's not equal, it's fair, if you understand what I mean. So the percentage of your
point,
the percentage of your money that you're willing to put towards the joint account should be reflective of what it is that you earn. And, like, maybe the percentage is the same, but the amount of money you earn is different, so that amount is different for each person, if you know what I mean. But that's key as well.
It is.
And having a conversation around, if you're setting up a household, what you're in charge of and what they're in charge of. And it comes back to the responsibility piece. How what are you going to take responsibility for, so that you don't end up in arrears as a couple as a result of, you know, somebody not being responsible?
Yeah, because you could be really financially responsible and you marry a person who really isn't. And that will impact, you know, your everything about your life, really. What's next? What was the first thing on your list?
Religion.
Ah.
And that could be, like, talking pre-engagement, that could be a conversation that you'd have around, what are we going to do with our wedding ceremony? Like, are we going to have a wedding, like a traditional wedding? Will there be religion involved?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then that would kind of segue into children and like religion for your family and if that's mm-hmm. important for you and what yeah. that might look like and that conversation. Yeah. So I think that's important too.
Totally. And I think it's important in the context of, yes, you know, what type of wedding will you have? Will it be in a church? Will it be in a like a mosque? Will it be in a non-denominational civil service? Or will it be humanist? Will it be spiritualist? There's so mm-hmm. many different ways it could take place. But then obviously the what religion your family will be is a big, huge one, because if you are the same religion as your partner, but say, for instance, they're like very, very practicing or active within their religion,
yeah.
and you're not particularly, is it a case you would rather your children, your potential children, not be active? Or would you not really care? And then, like, because, you know, two people of the same religion might be like, oh, we're both the same religion, so that's fine. Like, we don't mm-hmm. need to discuss that. That's not always the case, because mm-mm. how involved in that religion you would like to be as a couple and how involved in that religion your potential family will be is a discussion worth having. So I definitely think that's a big one. I had that with my husband when we had Lydia, because we had to discuss whether we wanted to christen her or whether we didn't. I was brought up Roman Catholic, and so was he. And mm-hmm. Neither of us are practicing Catholics anymore. I have actually since unregistered myself or whatever it is that you do from the church. But
Discommunicated?
Excommunicated.
You excommunicate yourself?
I did, and I put it on the census as well that I'm non, you know, whatever.
How did you do that? Let's not get into that right now.
Okay.
We'll come back to that later.
Yeah. But yeah, so I just, because I mean, look, I don't want to offend anyone who is enjoying their Catholic faith, but I actually, do you know what it is? It's not even Catholicism. It's not Christianity that I dislike. I actually quite like those religions, and I think they're lovely, and I think there are beautiful elements. I do not feel comfortable with the Catholic Church as an institution, mm-hmm. Because, to be frank, they hate women, they hate children, and they hate gay people and any kind of queer person, and they don't agree with trans people. And I can't be involved personally. So this is the conversation that my husband and I had to have. And it is definitely something that is important. And thankfully we had it before we got married, and we're on the same page, obviously, but it is a biggie. The next thing that kind of leads on to the next thing on my list, which was children. Mm-hmm. So the main question, do you want any, you know, do you want to have extend your family from two people to three, four, or five and more, and mm-hmm. how many children you might like to have. And a key thing that some people might not talk about in advance, because obviously, you know, you're going to have the children talk and that kind of would come up. I would imagine it's probably come up for you already with your boyfriend, mm-hmm. even though you guys aren't together like years and years and years. It's something that you almost talk about quite early on, I find, in like dating or whatever. But something that people often neglect to discuss is, what would your preference be if conceiving became a problem? So would you like to, as a couple, go down the IVF route? Would mm-hmm. you like to adopt? Would you like to foster? And if IVF wasn't an option, would you consider surrogacy? All of those things are an important discussion. Like, and we had it here as well. We said that if we couldn't conceive naturally, IVF wasn't something that was going to be for us. And that was just a completely personal choice for us. And adoption wasn't going to be for us either. And thankfully, again, we're on the same page, and we were on the same page from the get-go. But that is something to ask your other half, like, because you might both say, yes, we definitely want to, you know, we want family, we'd love three kids, grant. Mm-hmm. But what happens then if you can't have them? Or what happens if you struggle to conceive? Like, mm-hmm. what are your choices then? And are they in alignment with your partner's choices is a key thing.
Yeah, I think that's huge. And I think you're so right. People don't really go past the, do we want to have children? And then what does that look like? in a couple of different scenarios, you know, running the scenarios through. So that's really good. I really like that one.
What's your next one?
I suppose stress and how you manage and deal with stress. And like just not like I've had a stressful day, but like in life, you know?
How do you deal with like hardship?
Like what is your, I remember, I think it was a friend or could have been a motivational speaker, because what I'm about to say seems a little bit intense, but I remember somebody saying, I don't want to be in a relationship with somebody that hasn't experienced hardship, because if you don't know how to manage something big, I don't want to teach you. And I remember thinking, that's really hard. You know, that's a lot.
Harsh.
But a part of me kind of understands, because if you get into, so like I'm in my 30s now, if you haven't experienced something that has caused you to question, you know, how do I manage this? How do I cope? And you're faced with that in your 30s, those life skills aren't necessarily there. And some people have a completely, you know, beautiful, privileged, fantastic life. And I don't mean privileged in a negative way. I just mean like they haven't experienced loss, or they haven't experienced.
They're lucky. They're lucky.
And then for something to happen, it can almost be like breaking point, you know, because you're faced with that as an adult and you've never developed coping mechanisms up until then. Now, I don't think there are many of those people in the world, unfortunately, because the world we live in, but it was just something that stuck with me. And I think what it speaks to more is your coping style and your, you know, how you, not only your coping style, but how you want to be treated when you're feeling like that as well. I think that comes into it, because the couple will suffer one way or another, you know?
And I think as well, like with that one, how much alone time do you need when you're feeling stressed? Do you need support? Do you need encouragement? Do you need me to keep away from you and stay quiet? Like, because sometimes like Dean and I will have this conversation where I'll be stressed and I'll need to rant, and at the start he did not say this, but now I have kind of trained him, for want of a better phrase, to basically say to me, do you want advice here, or do you want to just be listened to? And quite often what I want when I'm having a rant or when I'm stressed and I need somebody to talk to, I don't want advice. I'm not looking for advice. I'm not looking for help. I'm not looking for someone to say, well, this is what you should do. All I'm looking for is someone to listen to me and someone to say, oh my God, that's awful, or whatever, you know, and to just give me some kind words. So knowing how your partner would want, you're completely right, knowing how your partner would want to be treated when under particular times of stress or grief or loss or sadness or any of those things that, you know, we will inevitably go through in our lives is a really, it's a really important question to ask. And, you know, looking back, obviously, you know, when you're dating, when you're getting to know each other, past traumas will come up, and it's a good thing to kind of note how your partner dealt with those things, because that's probably an indicator of how they will deal with things going forward.
Absolutely. I agree 100%.
One of the big ones for me is and was the balance of parenting and the balance of I want to say home-based labor. So like, you know, chores, you know, housework. Putting out the bins, emptying the dishwasher, who cleans the floors, who cleans the bathrooms, you know, and then also what is your partner's expectation on you for parenting, the division of parenting labor, and what is their expectation of you, and what is your expectation of them? Because it's all very well and good to decide, yes, we'd love to have a family, and yes, we'd love to have children, and, you know, have a house and do whatever, but like if you have a child with someone and then all of a sudden you realize that they are, you know, only interested in being a parent on Saturday afternoons, you're you know, pretty fucked then. That's not something that it's not even, if you haven't had that conversation, it's not even something that you can be particularly, you obviously will be particularly annoyed, but it's something that you need to say in advance. You need to get that on paper before you have a child, or even before you have a pet, before you have anything beyond yourselves. You need to decide who does what in the house, who's willing to do what. And you know, like for me, I'm not, I just don't deal with bins. I just don't do it. It makes me, like, the smell makes me gag. I don't like touching dirt. I just don't like emptying bins, basically. And so my husband does that. And there are things in the house that I do as a kind of to balance that out, you know. And we came to the conclusion that our division of household labor is 50-50, and I'm happy with that. And the division of parenting is probably, I'd say, 75-25, purely based on the fact that he works full time and I don't. And, like, you know, when we're both there, or when it's one or the other, like, he probably parents 25% solo and I probably parent 75% solo, if you get what I'm saying.
I understand completely.
But it's 100% something that needs to be discussed in advance, because you could end up very, very bloody disappointed.
I can't speak to the parenting side of things, but I completely understand. But I can understand how that would become very quickly a very big point of contention, where it's like, sorry, this is our child.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
because 50-50. Well, you think when you have, like, you think when you get pregnant, you think when you're pregnant, you're like, oh, well, you know, 50-50, we both had this baby. It's both of ours. We literally gave it 50% of everything that it has. Ergo, you know, the division of parenting will be 50-50. But I don't know of any couple that has children where the division of parenting is exactly equal.
50-50, yeah. Yeah.
Like, I really don't. And that's something that, like, I'm not saying it has to be. I don't think it has to be. And in fact, in my case, it's not. But I just think that you have to know what the other person is expecting and is willing to do. What is next on your list?
So it kind of comes back to the stress thing. Sorry, I just yawned. If I sound a bit strange, I was trying to do it quietly.
We're all very tired.
Coming back to the stress thing, it's kind of related to that, but it's communication style.
Oh yeah,
and that is so important. And I know we've done episodes on that before.
Oh, like love languages and shit too. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think that's really important, because you need to know. I think if you don't have an understanding of what you need and what you want and what your partner needs and what they want, it's just going to cause stress, unnecessary stress, because if you have an understanding of that before you get there, great. Also, if you have this conversation and you realize that actually this isn't going to jive with my worldview, you're getting out before you're in, do you know?
Yeah. And I think that the communication thing, like, it's more than just, you know, like, oh, let's always make sure we keep talking, but it's beyond that. It's how you communicate. So, like, some people are inclined to like, if they're having an argument or whatever, some people are inclined to shut down and say nothing and then mull it over for an hour and then come back. Other people are inclined to.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Talk first, think later, and say things that they might regret. Other people are, you know, some people are, this sounds awful, but some people are like shouters, as in when they have arguments, they raise their voice and they slam doors and they get very animated. And I'm not saying that's a good or a bad thing, but it's probably something, a learned behavior from their family or their own parents, or, you know, whatever environment they grew up in. Like, for me, I have never, ever, ever heard my parents raise their voice to each other. And that's not how they, you know, don't get me wrong, they argue and they have, you know, have always argued like normal couples, but like they've never raised their voice. So my way of communicating with my husband is like, we never raise our voices. And I would be absolutely gobsmacked if either of us ever ended up having a screaming match. Now, we have other ways of, you know, facing each other head to head. Like we've other ways of having arguments.
Yeah.
And often like he's a bit of a sulker, as in he shuts down a bit. Whereas mm-hmm. I'm like, no, we need to talk about this immediately now.
Yeah.
And we need to completely resolve it before I can, you know, move on with my life. Whereas yeah. he's just like, oh no, I'm good. I'm just gonna shut down and not talk, you know. So
yeah,
we do have arguments just in different ways, and figuring out what way your other half argues or what way your other half just communicates. What way do they like to have conversations? What way do they express themselves best?
Mm-hmm.
Is something to look at, I think.
Agree.
My next one is in-laws.
Or outlaws, as my mom sometimes refers to them as.
This one's kind of a simple, not so, geez, no, in-laws are never simple, but like this one is to do with, I suppose, when you get with someone, how involved with their family are you going to be expected to be?
Mm-hmm.
And how involved in your family are they going to be expected to be? So like for me, I'm very close to my family. I know you're incredibly close to your family.
Mm-hmm.
I like to see my family very, very, very frequently. Like I would probably see both my parents 3 or 4 times a week. I would see my sister the same, my nephew the same. Whereas with my husband's parents, we probably see his mom once a week. We probably see his dad less often, you know, and that's kind of fine. And we probably would go to family occasions with my family more often, purely because they have them more often, because we have really family. We would probably go to his stuff less often, but I quite enjoy spending time with his family. So it's not, you know, like, I think the thing is, what's the expectation? And then also, and this is an interesting one, if there was ever to be a conflict between an in-law and one half of the couple. So say, for instance, in your case, right, say whatever happened, your boyfriend's mother was like, no, I'm not doing that. And you were like, no, we are doing that. That's exactly what's happening. Say, I don't know, say, for instance, you had a child.
Mm-hmm.
And you decided that you weren't going to christen it. And mm-hmm. then your mother-in-law was like, oh no, the child is being christened.
Mm-hmm.
That puts your boyfriend in a very awkward position.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is between the head of his family and the one half of his new family.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? So like, that's a conversation worth having as well. Who is going to win that fight? Is it going to be you guys as a couple making a decision, or is it going to be an in-law?
Mm-hmm.
And like things like, you know, minor things like, well, I'd really prefer if you got married in a church, or if I'd really prefer if whatever, like those sorts of things can cause huge issues in couples, because one half of the couple will be like, well, I need to do what my mom says.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that might mm-hmm. not be, that might not be for the best. Shall we say?
Absolutely. It just mightn't be for the couple.
No, exactly. Yeah. And but that's worth talking about, because that can cause
all sorts of chaos.
Yeah. Like if that's not decided ahead of time,
mm-hmm.
That you can run into serious
all problems. Sorts. Yeah, I agree. That's really important.
What's your next one?
Deal breakers, which kind of leads on from in-laws in a big way. But like, what's the end of days? Do you know what I mean? Where's your line?
Mm-hmm.
What is it going to take? What is it going to take for the relationship to break down as far as you're concerned? What does that look like? Do you know what I mean? What would constitute the end?
Do you mean like what would cause you to look for a divorce?
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting. And actually, that's not a conversation that I've had with Dee.
Yeah. Or like, or even like, you know, big things. So like, what would make the relationship not work from either person's perspective? So yeah, how would things end? Mm-hmm. Or what's like a big thing that you're not willing to move on? Do you know that kind of way?
Like something like, where do you want to live?
Yeah, that could be one. Yeah, definitely that could be one.
Like,
or children could be one.
Children could be one, yeah.
You know, yeah. Or faith and religion could be one. You know, like it depends, but like that's quite specific to each individual.
But I suppose a deal breaker could be, like, obviously we're assuming that you'll have had the children conversation. But if you got into a relationship and you were both like, yeah, we want to have kids, we want to have a family. And then down the line, one person was like, actually, do you know what? I've changed my mind on that. That might be a deal breaker.
Yeah.
You know, or yes, the discussion on where to live, or something like if you fell out of love, like what mm-hmm. would that look like for you? Like, as in, is that something, is that a condition under which you would be like, I think we should break up here, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So basically talk amongst yourselves and list the things that you think might, yeah, like signal the end of the relationship, and how far it would have to go before you'd be like, I want this end. Like, I legally want to be unmarried from you.
Mm-hmm.
The next one, and I think this is incredibly important, is sex. And of course, I think this is incredibly important as the host of a sex podcast, but your sex expectations. Listen, it's just more convenient to merge those two words.
Yeah, it is.
Sex expectations is actually much more difficult to say. But your expectations around sex are very, 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 very important. And here's the reason why, Andrea.
No.
Yes, you can, if you think about it, right, you can kind of outsource most issues in a relationship, right? So say you are having problems with your communication style. Go to a couples therapist.
Mm-hmm.
If you are having problems with the division of labor in the household, hire a cleaner, hire a childminder, put your kids in creche. Now, obviously, look, all this is finance pending, and like this all requires money, but like, kind of just hypothetically speaking.
In the ideal world, there are places that you could get this help.
Exactly. So even with, you know, how you deal with stress. There are ways, like within a couple, there are ways of dealing with most things externally. When it comes to sex, the only place to deal with it is internally in the couple. Now, obviously, look, you can go to sex therapy. I'm not saying that that can't be done. It can, of course. But sex is such an intimate thing
mm-hmm.
that really the only place that it can be resolved is among two people.
Yeah. I agree 100%.
And look, obviously, it can be resolved with three or four or five people, and that resolution can be divorce. But what you, do you know what I mean? If you are in a couple where you haven't discussed how often you want to have sex, what good sex means to you, you know, how is your libido affected by hormones? How is your libido in general? Is it high? Is it low? Is it medium? Does it change? Does it fluctuate? How do you feel when you go for a while without sex? How do you feel when, you know, is it okay if you masturbate? Is it okay if you watch porn? All of those things are so important, and they're so intimate, and so they're just so private to a couple and mm-hmm. personal to a couple that it's, you need to have that conversation. You really mm-hmm. do. And I feel like if you're in a couple that isn't particularly sexually compatible, it might not be a huge, huge issue now, but I think, like, as in the present moment, mm-hmm. but I think sexual incompatibility only gets worse as time passes, and therefore could lead to much larger issues down the road. So it's worth chatting about them, you know, as early on as you possibly can, I think.
Yeah.
And that kind of counts for like the duration of your relationship. I would always say keep the lines of communication open, particularly when it comes to sex, because as Lisa said in one of the previous episodes this season, like it's your sex life is a kind of a mirror of your, of how your relationship is going. So if mm-hmm. your sex life is, you know, non-existent, your relationship is probably broken down in terms of communication as well.
Yeah.
So the sex conversation is,
it's huge. It is. And like everybody's expectations and the expectations that everybody has within their relationship are quite personal. So there's no number, there's no right, there's no wrong, as we've said before when we've brought up this topic, but understanding that at the foundation of a serious relationship is so important, because mm-hmm. you're right, it's reflective, but it also, like, keeping the lines of communication, I think, open around that is important, because as we get older and as life happens, you're not the same person. Do you know, we're not the same person we were when we were, you know, in our teens, in mm-hmm. our 20s, and that changes. So I think it's important to just keep that going, that chat. Yeah. That's not a one and done kind of thing.
No, it's not. It's an ongoing conversation. But I definitely think having a big chat about sex and all its wonders at the apex, like as in,
yeah,
when you're about to make the decision to like get engaged or married, have a big open discussion about sex, and actually an indicator that maybe you're not quite ready to make that kind of commitment to each other is if the big sex conversation is kind of awkward. Like if you're like, oh God, I really don't want to talk to them about sex, that's a signal that like you actually aren't as intimate with this person as you think you are. Because being able to sit down with someone face to face in a non-sexual situation and be like, okay, how often do you want to do this? Do you like what turns you on, what doesn't? Like that's a difficult conversation to have, and it takes a lot of maturity, and it takes a lot of confidence, and it takes a lot of security within a pairing.
Yeah.
And so that's, I actually think that's a lovely indicator of, are we ready to commit to each other long term here? Because it's a really intimate thing that you have to feel very, very safe within a partnership to be able to do. Mm-hmm. And that leads us on to what I believe is your last point, Andrea Jane Doyle.
Fidelity.
Oh, or infidelity.
Oh, I'm going to choke.
Oh, no. Please don't die.
How unfortunate.
If you passed away live on air, I don't think I could cope with it.
I don't think you could broadcast it either. So give me a second. Sorry.
Go on.
Yes. Fidelity and infidelity. And I suppose to begin with, what does that mean to you? Because it's a spectrum, as we've learned recently, with people. What was the thing that cushioning? Etc. So you know what I mean, how that's perceived. But anyway, so you need to have an understanding around what that means, what you would constitute cheating and what your partner would constitute cheating. And then
it's bizarre how different people's opinions on things are. Like it's actually wild.
It was, and when you start having these conversations even with friends, you're like, oh no, absolutely not, that wouldn't be okay. And they're like, well, that's not that bad. Personally, that's red flag behavior. Do you know what 100%. I mean? So it's I think it's important. And I think again, this kind of comes back to the point you made about the mirror. What do you do then if somebody does cheat, and how you might cope with that, and what does that signal to be? You know what I mean? So there's that whole other thing to unpack, but I think that's huge. I think understanding what the expectation, it's kind of like going into a partnership, like any kind of partnership, what are the expectations of the other person? Like, no, I don't want you to be, you know, talking to other people in an intimate way, or emotionally having an emotional relationship. So, you know what I mean? Like what people are comfortable with and what they're not is different, but it's important.
I was on somebody's Instagram page today. I can't even remember who it was, if I'm honest, but I did, you know, the way like you're flicking through, and I saw a poll, and basically it was like something like, is flirting cheating?
Mm.
And it was like, just yes or no. And I picked no, because I don't think it is. Like, like obviously sustained flirting with the same person over a really long time could be perceived as cheating. But I don't think, like, you know, like if my husband was to go on a night out and somebody was to flirt with him, I wouldn't be like, well, you've cheated on me. And that for me is not a line. Well,
but I think the definition of flirting, this is what it comes back to.
Okay.
What do you constitute flirting?
Well, I would constitute anything that's non-physical, like being chatted up or
having a bit of banter,
and a bit of crack. Obviously, you know, anything physical, I think I would probably have an issue with. And I also think I would have a problem with if it was like extended chats over the course of a long time. I'd probably be a bit like,
what's going on here? Yeah.
But on a night out or on a, you know, on a once off kind of, I've just met this person and they're chatting to me and it's all very flirty. Like, I wouldn't have a problem with that if that was to happen with my husband. I don't think he'd feel the same about me, which is interesting. Like, I think he would have a problem there. I don't think he'd appreciate anyone flirting with me, if I'm honest. But that's fine because I know what my boundaries are, and I know, and he knows what his boundaries are. And he, you know, he knows what I find. But then as well, some people, you know, some people consider watching porn to be cheating, and some people consider, but then other people consider, like, it's only cheating if you have sex in this province. Do you know what I mean? It's,
yeah,
it's like there's so many variations. There's such a, like, a spectrum, as you said.
Yeah, and I think
what cheating means,
I think it's what works for the partnership, what that what that looks like. But I think,
and it doesn't have to be the same either,
no, you know, no, each person has different preferences, 100%. But I think, you see the way you said flirting and somebody was like, yes or no, is this cheating? Yeah. I think going down a level and being like, well, what does that mean to you? Where does that start and end? And then what's after that? And what does that mean? Because that is where I think people fall down. I don't think, I think people, the lack of communication, the lack of defining parameters around this kind of stuff is where people get themselves in an awful big hole.
Yeah. And it's really like the cheating question is, or the infidelity question is a definite deal breaker, I think, as well. So like if in advance of getting married or getting engaged, you discover that your partner doesn't consider, I don't know, doesn't consider oral sex as cheating. I mean, you're not going to, if that's 100% cheating for you, you're not going to be happy, and you're not going to, like, that's not going to, it's not going to work. You know what I mean? And even if your preferences are different, you do still have to come to an agreement of sorts and
this is it.
Respect the other person's personal boundary about what constitutes infidelity. I think that's the end, Adrea. I think that is the end of the episode. I was calling you Adrea, which is what I always call, Lydia calls you, basically. Adrea. Except she doesn't say it nearly as, like, she's 18 months old, she can't pronounce Adrea yet, although she can't say belly button, which is hilarious.
It's one of my favorite things.
She can't say man, but she could say belly button. It's like, I don't understand the child. She's an anomaly. Anyway, we'll wrap it up, will we? Because you are about to fall asleep and I am absolutely wrecked. And you know what I'm going to go in and watch now before? I'm going to watch the first 4.5 minutes of, and then I want to fall asleep. Taskmaster.
Oh, yes.
If Thursday. Anyone is listening and they haven't watched Taskmaster, please take it from me. It is one of the best shows on television. It is so funny. So, so funny. And you can, why are you pointing at me?
Because I told you about this and you refused.
I know. So did Dean. He was like, you have to watch Taskmaster. And I was like, no, I'm not watching it.
Coaxing me and your husband have to get you to do to watch some things sometimes. I feel like they have to be subliminally messaged into you, like in the background of like your favorite show. You know what I mean?
Well, it kind of does. And I'll tell you why. I don't have a lot of time on my hands to watch television. So if I'm going to decide to watch something, I need to be like 100% certain that I'm going to love it. Like, I mean, it has to be something. If I'm going to give an hour a day to television, it has to be grade A television. And I just wasn't convinced on Taskmaster. And then, look, I got convinced. It's all fine now. It's brilliant.
Do you know what not to waste your time with you and to the listeners? The Watcher.
Okay, yeah, really? Oh, well, I would watch anyway because it seems pretty scary, and you know how I'm not down for scary.
It starts off pretty scary, descends into just incredible. No,
just madness.
And then, like, completely unbelievable, and then a letdown at the end. So there you go. Oh, that's my review. Yeah.
And come here, does it descend into the supernatural?
No.
All right, because you see, I was watching something before. What was it? I can't remember. Oh,
Stranger Things?
No. It was a limited series. I think it only had like 8 or 9 episodes total. Right. And I was watching it and I was like, this is brilliant. And I was, oh my God, absolutely bet into it. And then all of a sudden, it turned into this like supernatural thing where someone had special powers and they could make thoughts flow out of someone's head and into someone else. And I was like, ah, lads, like I thought this was just real life here. I can't be dealing with supernatural. I just can't. And it's not that I'm scared of it. It's just that I'm like, this isn't real. I can't identify to this or identify with this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you won't be able to identify with the Watcher either. So pass.
Okay. I'll pass on the Watcher.
That is a public service announcement for you.
Thank you.
And for the listeners. Watch Taskmaster. Forget about the Watcher. There's a podcast on Taskmaster you can listen to as well. Finish listening to this one, of course.
Yes, only. And only when.
And only.
Now, we're going to take
A suspiog,
a small break of a few weeks. But we will be back again in season 3. And we hope that you will return to listen. We also hope that you'll bring a friend to listen.
Honestly.
We'd love that.
Friends are welcome.
One friend, just one. If every single person that listened to this podcast brought a friend, when I tell you, getting an advertiser would be much easier.
Please, lads.
Because it all depends on ads and numbers.
And numbers.
So,
also on the point of, ads, that could lead us into reviews. And if you feel that way inclined.
Here we go.
5 stars. And when we move to video, they're going to see my spirit fingers.
And they're going to see those spirit fingers and they're going to be like, okay, those deserve 5 stars. Or will they? We'll see.
What's wrong with my spirit fingers?
Well, they're lovely. They're lovely. They're absolutely lovely. Okay. And okay, on that note, we will wrap up this episode and we will see you. Maybe we will see you. We'll be on YouTube by then. Maybe I've gotten over myself and be able to tolerate myself on camera. We will be speaking to you anyway in a few weeks' time. And until then, stay safe.
Have fun.
And goodbye.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.